Hello, everybody out there. It is D-Grads time again. And what is D-Grads? It's the Degrassi Rewatch Podcast. And we are two of the stars of the show who have never actually seen the show. Isn't that weird?
It is very weird, Shane, but it's true. This episode is about learning how to gracefully die on your very first hill. And we're also going to discuss freedom of speech in schools and also genetically modified foods.
It wasn't Emma's first hill. I don't think.
Yeah,
it was
yeah
the
good
first
point.
Hill. Anyway, let's introduce ourselves. I am Shane Warren Kipple. I played Gavin Spinner Mason,
and I'm Mike Lobel, and I played Jay Hogarth.
I can't wait to see Jay Hogarth. He's just a apparition at this point.
I'm getting nervous. I like. What if I hate it?
Then you will be in the same boat that I find myself in week after week.
I did think about that. I'm like, wow, Shane's going to watch all of his performances every week, pretty much.
Yeah. And the last couple, and this is, it was going in a certain direction.
This is a big episode for you, too.
Yeah. But I felt a few episodes ago that my performance was like it was just north of solid, and it was getting better. And then the last couple, I'm like, oh, come on, man,
no,
please.
I disagree. I liked it. I thought you were good in this episode.
Dude,
your hair is amazing. And even from the back, like I'm looking like when they're shooting over the shoulder, I'm like, damn, even the back of his hair looks awesome.
Yeah, it's the old Rick the Temp frosted tips.
I want that hairstyle, and I think I might get it.
I don't think you want it, and I don't think anyone should get that anymore. Or can get that. Can you even go into a barbershop and say, like, give me 90s frosted tips?
It's illegal now.
It's illegal.
Yeah, it's been outlawed in this province.
Oh, thank heavens. That and flavored cigarettes. Both of those things had to go. Do you know about that? You're not a smoker, but like any flavored tobacco, not vapes, but at some point, not sure when it was, any of those flavored, like the Cigarellos, Primetime cigarettes.
Really? They got outlawed?
Not available anywhere.
So even if I wanted a Cigarello, I couldn't go out and get one.
I think all they have are the wine tip ones, but they have no grape, no cherry, none of the other flavors, no chocolate.
Yeah.
Everything that made smoking fun, kids.
Yeah. Kids loved them.
Yeah.
Good riddance. No, now it's all about the Juuls and the vapes and the like cotton candy and the
Juuls. How old are you, man? Juuls. Juul hasn't been around in like 10 years.
Thinking of investing in Juul.
Yeah, I don't think you should do that. But Mike, there is a title to this episode. It's
as there is
fight
always
for your right.
That's right.
Is this the Beastie Boys song?
You remember correctly.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because it was surprisingly from 1986. So we're still in keeping with 80s pop music. And I was shocked because this song, it's obviously like an anthem about teenage rebellion. And they played it at every single party that I went to when I was a teenager. I don't know about you.
They still do.
Yeah. And ironically, apparently the band has said that they were spoofing other like, you know, party culture anthems and the machismo of that. And so that's what this song actually ironically became, to their dismay, I'm sure.
But I mean, Emma is doing anything but partying throughout this episode. She is fighting for her right, for sure. But that
Definitely.
Right is not to party. It's her right to protest. It's
That's
her
right.
right to freedom of speech and her right to not eat GMO foods.
The first thing that I noticed about this episode was just where we were at culturally and the level of fear mongering around GMO foods, which I think. Now, this is debatable, I'm sure, but people might write in, but it's, you know, it's been 30 years after GMO foods became sort of mainstream, and all of these fears about, you know, they're going to recode our genetics, we're going to be mutants of GMO food in the future. This has not really come to pass. So just watching Emma and her fear, just the sort of fear tactics that she was employing here made me feel nostalgic.
But there are some countries, I mean, every country has its own regulations when it comes to GMO, and some are, you know, have a population that's perpetually sick, right? So it, yeah, it didn't have to be everyone developed cancer, but we didn't really know about how it would manifest throughout the years. So maybe we are seeing it with, you know, all of the new conditions that are constantly popping up. We don't know.
In the pro-GMO end of the ring, it's me. And in the anti-GMO end of the ring, it's Shane.
Oh, I didn't say anti.
Let's do this. The gloves are coming off. I mean, the thing that really got me was the tomato scorpion hybrid that Emma whips out when Radich is eating the apple.
Yeah.
It made my stomach turn. It's pretty provocative.
The tomato.
The tomato. Yeah. And it's gross. But then you think, I think, like, if I were starving, I would eat a scorpion. There are people and cultures that do eat scorpions. So what's she trying to say?
But also, I mean, for pest control, I don't know anything about farming, about harvest, but I do know that if they lose an entire crop to pestilence, that's not good for anybody.
Yeah.
So, you know.
And there is the argument that genetically modified food has actually helped feed vast amounts of starving populations on the planet that need access to cheaper food sources. And so, yeah, it is a debate.
And not to mention, Mike, when we were kids, which is a while ago, but also not that long ago, there were seasonal fruits and vegetables.
Yeah.
There were things that you could not get for half of the year.
Truly.
Because they just couldn't be grown. And now you have access to everything year round, at least, you know, in Canada, in North America, everything year round. And that is because of modern, you know, farming and agricultural techniques. So anyway,
let's not take it for granted.
No, but we will, because how can we not?
You're flying in a chair in the sky. All right. Should we get into it?
I think we should, just to introduce the episode a wee bit better. This is, once again, Fight for Your Right, Season 2, Episode 19, Canadian air date, February 2nd, 2003, U.S. air date, August 22nd, 2003. Yeah, it's quite a long time ago.
And they put Gavin Smith back behind the camera. They're like, all right. That's enough directing for you.
You had your fun, kid.
Behind the camera now.
Yeah. Let the big boys get back to work. Sean Yara with the story. Aaron Martin also with the story. And Susan Nielsen with the teleplay. Chris Deacon was the director of this episode. I guess he
was
proficient in the art of food fight capture.
Oh, yeah. That's why they hired him for sure.
All right. Without further ado, we get to the episode. Now, we open on Emma practicing a pitch for the removal of genetically modified foods from the cafeteria. And her audience? Well, it's Archie or Snake or Simpson. He goes by so many names. But at home, he's Archie or Snake. I can't call him Archie. I just can't.
I know.
Emma wants to keep practicing, but Snake assures her that she is ready and then awkwardly steps into the role of Emma's quasi-parent by sending her to bed. Spike is away for a few days and Snake is not used to being in charge, but he's doing his best. Roll credits.
This is, I really did feel for Snake's predicament here. He's got a dilemma. He's got to be the teacher and he's got to be the parent. And I think in this episode, those two people would do drastically different things in this situation.
Mm-hmm.
And I like his solution. We'll get there, but I like his solution.
Oh, you jumped ahead to near the end.
Yeah. With Emma's activism in the school and her conflict with the principal, he's in uncharted territory. And I really.
Yes. He bit off more than he could chew without even knowing he was eating.
Exactly.
Yes. Okay. Now we are walking to school and Emma's with Manny, JT, and Toby. And Manny is singing Emma's praises for speaking up for what she believes in, comparing her to Joan of Arc.
That's exactly fair. Fair comparison.
She is ready for battle. Now we are with Spinner, and he stands in front of a bulletin board taking notice of a help wanted posting for a job in the CAF. Craig and Marco walk up and question if he's actually considering applying for this. Then Jimmy walks up, sporting a brand new expensive 555 sole head to toe wardrobe.
555 sole.
I remember when he got sponsored by them on the show.
That's not a real brand, though. We made that up.
No. It's a real brand.
Oh, shoot.
Yeah, I had no idea. Yeah.
Season 2, we're wheeling and dealing, getting that brand logo placement.
He was the first one to get sponsored. He might have been the only one to get sponsored by a clothing line during the show. Of course. It was written in the stars for
Wait,
that guy.
Aubrey got sponsored by this clothing line in, like, him as a person?
His character. Yeah. Oh. Like, for a period of time, he was only wearing triple, or maybe it was and
triple
one.
555 sole.
Anyway, 555 sole. Real brand.
Cool.
Or at least it was. So his new wardrobe, he tells everyone, was bought for him on a shopping spree with his dad, and Spinner is stung with a little bit of envy. As they walk off, Spinner throws another glance back at the job posting.
But you know what I wish I could have said to Spinner? That although it might look cool, Jimmy is just having money and clothes poured into a father-sized hole in his heart. Because his parents are never around.
But I think Spinner is tired of love and wants that cold, hard cash.
Yeah, he wants that moolah.
He is a material girl. This is a material world. Now we are with Emma, Ashley, and Nadia, who are presenting Radich with their pitch for the removal of GMO and options of what to replace it with and how they can do that. But as passionate as they are, Radich is not convinced, even though he's made visibly uncomfortable knowing that there's scorpion DNA or might be scorpion DNA in the school's tomatoes. He is of the mind that the food that's being used is perfectly safe, and with the budget cuts that the school is going through, they're lucky to still have a cafeteria at all.
Yep. If you picture a scorpion, like, chopped up and fused together with a tomato, that feels a little gross, right? It's kind of a gross image. But when you think about DNA and how it works, and the fact that human beings share between, like, 50 and 60% of our DNA with a banana, you realize how closer we are to everything we see that's alive on the planet than we are apart. Then it just doesn't seem so strange.
I mean, if anyone is under the impression that they are actually going to infuse, like, chopped up scorpion into plants somehow, and this is where where the fear comes from. Anyway, I can understand it.
Tomatoes are grown in feces.
Everything is.
Yeah. So put that in your pipe and smoke it.
We have a nice name for it. It's fertilizer, but it's still poops, guys.
It's poop.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wash your vegetables.
Do you rinse or do you, like, full out wash?
I'm a rinser.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm one of those people who believes that a little bit of some nasty stuff can build your immune system.
I like it.
You know?
But do you really think that of all the hands that, you know, let's just say this head of lettuce,
human hands, yeah, no, that's
has gone through
gross.
All of the transport from farm to factory to grocery store to your place, that a little bit of water on top is just gonna,
well, yeah, my it's funny because my first job ever was a produce boy at Price Chopper, and so I used to do prep behind, like, in the back there, and we used to fill these giant vats full of water, and actually you would wash the vegetables, you'd rinse the vegetables as they came out of the boxes before putting them out onto the floor. A lot of people don't know that. So I think between that and my at-home rinse, I think I'm pretty covered. But yeah, it is gross to think about all the hands. And I've had norovirus. I got norovirus on a plane on my honeymoon. I thought I was dying. We were over a toilet. Me and Mika both got this. And we were over a toilet pretty much for 4 days straight.
Sounds like a fun honeymoon.
A hilarious story in retrospect, but yes. It was the most god-awful thing. I still have a scar on my arm because I passed out on my feet. I blacked out. I was so fevered. And as I was coming down, a piece of something sharp and plastic in the room, I fell on it. And actually Mika luckily caught me and prevented my head from smashing into the stone floor. Anyway.
Wash your vegetables, folks. Yeah. That could be you. Lesson.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
I don't even want to go into the details about norovirus. It is prolific, and it is, you do not want to ingest this.
That concentrated.
It's so concentrated. It's so messed up. Stay safe.
Well, that's fun.
Yep.
That's fun.
Moving on.
Okay. So many fun ways to die. Now, we are in the media lab, and Simpson, because we're at school now, he's Simpson, allows some free web browsing time for the class. And Spinner uses this to do some online shopping at the same store where Jimmy got his new clothes. But it's obvious everything is too expensive for him.
$120 back then?
Back then? Dude, yeah. Yeah, very, very expensive. Spinner realizes Jimmy has a brand new MP3 player now, also from his dad. But as Spinner raves about it, Jimmy barely seems to care or appreciate it at all, and essentially brushes Spinner off when he says he's still using cassettes since his Discman broke.
It's like a first generation iPod, isn't it?
Yeah, it looks like that.
I miss those.
Is it actually? It had to have been.
I think it was. And the fact that they kept cutting away from it so frequently kind of made me think that it was maybe an Apple. But I do
authorization to show.
I also remember hearing on Saturday, I don't know if this is true or not, but Apple apparently is really, they're very okay with having their products being used on camera. Mm-hmm. They just have stipulations. And one of those stipulations is that the battery has to be over a certain percentage full.
Oh,
It has to be charged. In other words, I guess they want it to be a good representation of, you know what I mean? It would suck if it was a red low battery warning on screen. It wouldn't make your product necessarily look that great. So I don't know if that's true, but that's what I heard.
You know, one of their stipulations that is verifiable and true, that the antagonist in movies cannot use an Apple product.
Yeah, they're going to be using Android?
Yes. So if you're watching a whodunit, it's the spoiler alert, it's the person with the galaxy.
That's right.
That's the bad guy.
Spider-Man has an iPod.
Yes.
Shuffle.
All right. So Jimmy doesn't seem to care that Spinner is just green with envy and wanting all the things. And Spinner looks back to the website with everything unaffordable to him, and he is firmly in a mood.
Did you know, your character obviously doesn't come from money, and he's a little jealous. Did you have a sense of this when you started the show? Or are you coming to the realization about your character?
I don't think it was mentioned that anything about Spinner's socioeconomic status at home. We know his dad isn't around anymore, so he's going to be with a single mom. This was the first time I think it was ever brought up. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, cool. Yeah. Just curious.
But it wasn't... I don't think it was prefaced anywhere else, or I was ever told that this was part of the character. We're all learning together.
Yeah, and it's interesting to just to let the, you know, listeners know, it's we're discovering our characters as we go through the season or the entire series. We're mm-hmm. constantly learning new things that we might not have known, and it's cool.
I find it very interesting when there are shows that where a character plays out over like five seasons, but they knew certain things that would happen to that character years in advance, what they were working towards, like a you know, a Breaking Bad example.
Yeah.
But we did not have that luxury, and sometimes it could work against you, because then you're anyway not supposed to know the future. Now Sean and Emma walk home from school. And Emma stresses about not getting through to Radich with her presentation. She explains to Sean about animal DNA being used in fruits and vegetables, and he agrees after hearing that there might be fish DNA in apples.
Delicious.
That this is indeed messed up. And he tells her that...
Now we're infusing everything with omega oil. So, yeah, you know...
Like, yeah, that's right.
Sounds healthy.
That's right. Do you want it as a one-stop shop in your apple, or do you want to have to take supplements? Come on.
I want my fish scorpion apples.
It can defend itself and swim away if it needs to.
What an abomination.
So Sean tells Emma that even though he doesn't put much thought into things like this, it's obvious that she has something important to say, so she should keep pushing forward and not let Radich shut her down. He kisses her and runs off, and Emma beams, reinvigorated. It's amazing what a kiss from Daniel Clark can do.
Works wonders.
It's very therapeutic. Jimmy, Marco, and Spinner shoot hoops, and Marco takes notice of another new pair of shoes worn by Jimmy. Gleaming white. Jeez. They look expensive. Marco makes a joke about having Jimmy's parents adopt him, but Jimmy says that there's no room in the family because they already have an illegitimate son in Spinner, who is over all the time and eats all their food.
Hey, Marco's no slouch, okay? He's well put together, and this is, I want to say this is the first time we ever see his puffy vest?
No, it's. I think the first time we saw him... The very first episode when he was breakdancing.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Breakdancing in the puffer. Yeah. I mean, he's always doing the puffer vest. So, I mean, he's got style.
I actually wasn't focusing on it. Was it the blue one?
I think it was the burgundy one.
Oh, okay.
It was the orange, burnt orange.
Because I think he has a yellow one too. He has a lot of vests.
Because his arms are always too hot.
It's a choice, you know, and you got to keep center mass warm.
That's right.
Everything else will take care of itself.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, sorry, buried the lead here.
That's okay.
Is very rude, and I feel so bad for Spin in this situation.
Yeah. So Marco then says, "Well, if Spinner's part of the family, why doesn't your dad take him shopping?" And the two lay into Spinner for wearing over and over and over again a very old and very overused to this point hoodie, which Spinner really likes. But he doesn't really have a choice because he can't really afford anything else. And after hearing enough of this, Spinner has had enough. He snaps on Jimmy, calling him spoiled.
Mm-hmm.
And because this kind of comes out of nowhere, the two exchange some words. Jimmy leaves in a huff, and he forgets his MP3 player on the bench where they had their bags.
Dude, Spinner. He calls Spinner a freeloader.
Yeah, he called him a freeloader.
Oof.
Yeah, it's a tough one.
You're
but
still
I mean, like,
the feelings all these years later.
Everyone knows you can have your very close friends. Every so often, you're gonna get into a little spat, and sure. there are things that are always like boiling beneath the surface.
The buttons.
You release it, get it all out, say the mean things,
steal something of theirs. And then move on.
Yeah, that's right. Everyone steals their friend's stuff once in a while and tries to sell it to Kit Wayman. Yeah, he made an appearance again.
What a nice guy.
I do remember him. He was such a great guy. What a great
Sully.
guy.
His name is Sully. That was a fun discovery this episode.
With the indoor sunglasses,
yeah.
too.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's Bono. Jimmy leaves in a huff. Spinner notices that Jimmy forgot his MP3 player. And after a brief moment of contemplation, he pockets it.
Yes. Five-finger discount, as Jay Hogarth would say.
Yes.
He's going to return it, folks. He's going to do the right thing. Right?
We don't know that. Now Emma stands on the front steps of the school, handing out flyers on why people shouldn't eat the calf food. I found this moment really endearing because I forgot that Emma boycotted the calf. Spinner, earlier on, first season, boycott. Was that the first season? Or was that this season?
I think it was Save the Earwigs season.
Yes, that's right. That's right. That's right. And then the two got married, probably because they could bond. They could bond over when they were kids and boycotting that calf.
And Sheila. Poor Sheila. Mm-hmm. She's already taken enough guff from these kids.
Ellie and Emma get into a little debate. Ellie on the side of the more affordable GMO foods being a big help to those in third world countries, as it's more important to not starve today than worry about potential side effects way down the road.
Uh-huh.
And it's a good point. Radich then appears, grabbing one of the flyers, and after reading it, confiscates the whole stack. And he tells Emma that he will not allow the spreading of propaganda because it's his school and his jurisdiction.
This kind of sent me to the internet wondering about freedom of speech in schools, especially in Canada, and on school property. Like, what are the limitations of freedom of speech? Like, you're in, yes, it's a public school, so it's technically public, I guess, but there are rules and you can't break them. And inciting a food fight or, you know, a rebellion against your own cafeteria is probably not in the interest of the prince. So, yeah, anyway, we all feel like we inherently have the freedom of speech. And in North America, that's true. But there are caveats, you know, there are limitations to that.
Yes. Yes.
And he's got to like run this school and he's got to be, he's responsible for all the other kids and their well-being. So if it infringes on other people and other students who are all there trying to learn, yeah, it's a complicated issue. I don't know if you have any thoughts.
All of our rights come with limitations. And I don't know, at what point you're crossing a line when it comes to school. You are taught about the need for protesting in school. So I can understand why Emma would go out and you know, pound the pavement with that.
She feels like she's doing her civic duty.
Yes. But then Radich needs to maintain order. He is, you know, he is the establishment there. It's a funny one. I don't think she should have been given that ultimatum. I understand her position that if she is protesting and she's the food fight, if she caused that and she caused damage and an expense to the school to have to clean all that up, inconvenience, all this stuff, fine. But for being out there protesting and being forced to apologize or face suspension. Yeah. I don't know if that's right, but then again, protesters get arrested all the time, you know? So it comes with it. Freedom of speech does not mean that there will be no consequences for your action.
Climbing up on that hill.
Emma and Manny now sit in Quan's class, and Emma tells Manny what happened with the flyers. She goes into detail, and she decides that it's time to give up this fight. Radich wins. But just then, the morning announcements start to play, and Emma's shocked when a propagandic video of the cafeteria in all its glory featuring Sheila and JT starts to play. And angry with the hypocrisy of it all, Emma prepares for the next battle.
And that Jake Goldsby laugh in there is just so wholesome.
Yeah.
I could just watch him laugh like that all day.
I wish we could watch him laugh in person here.
Fingers crossed. We can dream.
I think we should dox him right now and get everyone to set up camp in front of his place.
Yeah. Go to Jake Goldsby's house and protest.
Yeah.
I was going to say, I don't know if Radich made it worse by commissioning this cafeteria commercial. Like, I think the better strategy would be to not inflame someone like Emma and just like let it slide, just let it go and fall away into history.
Fair, but I think in his position, he's like, she did some damage to the reputation of the calf. Now some kids might not want to eat there. Then the school loses money.
Mm-hmm. They lose the cafeteria for everybody.
Yeah, and some of the food goes bad. It's just he's thinking of the budget and all these things. So he's just trying to, you know.
Yeah.
Undo some of this damage.
Okay.
I get it. He just didn't know the animal he was messing with Emma. And Emma's just so like, she's so defiant when she's just standing in the principal's face, not backing down from this fight.
It gets even better. It's really inspiring. It is.
Yeah.
I agree.
Now we are in the calf and JT and Toby stand in line to buy food when a fired up Emma barges in and berates JT for taking part in that commercial. She then goes after both of them for buying the cafeteria food at all, singling out the possible lab grown potatoes used in the fries. And she grabs for the fries, but Toby won't let go, and the tug of war ends with the fries being flung all over Jimmy.
You don't touch somebody's fries, man. That's a big no-no.
I have a friend from junior high who, if you bought fries, everyone would just throughout the entire lunch come take a fry, take a fry, take a fry. He started spitting in his fries. The first thing he would do when he sat there would just hork in the fries.
Yeah, saliva sauce.
And it worked. And he had soggy fries, but at least he had his fries.
Jeez. That is smart. It is smart.
It's commitment.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well done.
What else was he supposed to do? There was nothing else that he could do. Yeah. He tried. Shout out to Brent.
You still doing that, buddy?
I hope he's not. That would be hilarious if that's what he does with his wife to make sure that she does it. We're not sharing.
God.
Jimmy is covered with fries. And it looked like gravy, even though there didn't seem to be any gravy in that container first, but anyway, Jimmy is very dirty and he retaliates immediately by throwing what I think was a cupcake or something with frosting back at them. But for all his, you know, athletic prowess, he misses huge and nails Paige, who then, to anybody, just a threat to all, is out for blood and is wanting to throw her pizza. Now, she singles out JT, who runs to where the tables are. The food gets flung at him, gets all over Craig. Craig is not going to take this sitting down, so he stands up, whips something back at Paige, and the whole cafeteria descends into a full-blown food fight.
Right. Now, so this, we got a lot of questions about this scene.
Okay.
So from our Discord, we've got a question here from Molly. DGrads alumni, check us out there. Or email questions to DGrads at dgradspodcast@gmail.com. We also have a Patreon, which enables us to do this show. You get video episodes, you can see our faces, ad-free and early releases on our Patreon. Support us there if you can. But this question's from Molly from Discord, and she says, how many takes were done for the food fight scene? Was a lot of real food used, or was props and makeup used. The little pieces of spaghetti on the t-shirt are always such a funny detail. Have either of you ever betrayed your friend or had anyone betray or steal from you the way Spinner did to Jimmy? And how did it affect your relationship with that person moving forward? Okay, so two separate questions there. Mm-hmm. But the food fight, let's go there first.
I was not there. I don't know.
Dude.
I know. I wasn't there.
Oh, no.
I don't know why Spinner wasn't there, but I wasn't. That's I don't even strange. Know if I was there that day. I heard it was fun. It's okay. We could ask Aubrey. We could ask Lauren. We could ask Jake.
Let me just get Aubrey on the phone real quick.
Yeah. But it looked like a lot of fun. I assume that there were a couple close-ups where they had to, you know, specifically show certain characters getting hit with certain foods. But then it was probably they just let the cameras roll and told everyone to go nuts. And they were just capturing things.
My guess is that because you don't have a reset on that, right? You've got a bunch of background in there in clean clothes.
Mm-hmm.
So the start of the food fight, you really got to get it in one in the first take. After that, you can pause, you can reset, you can take different angles and move around when everybody's already dirty and get all those cool, funny inserts on spaghetti on people's clothes and stuff. And I'm sure makeup probably was flown in there and I guess props and wardrobe were all probably consulted like a mega team to go in and place things just in, you know, right in the right spot, like lettuce on the head and all that stuff.
Yeah.
Mustard. But that would have been so fun.
Yeah, but for scenes like that, for scenes where someone gets wet, jumps in a pool, anything like that, a reset takes so long. If you think about a girl falling into a pool fully clothed and then something going wrong with the take, she has to dry off, she has to get into the exact same into another wardrobe, hair needs to dry, be restyled, makeup. Mm-hmm. it could be hours, really. Mm-hmm. So it's very important that everyone pays attention and does their job.
Kids. I'm looking at
can't mess that one up.
Young
but
actors.
No, I was not there.
And the other question from Molly was, have either of you ever betrayed your friend or had anyone betray or steal from you the way Spinner did to Jimmy? And how did it affect your relationship with that person moving forward?
Not me. You?
There have been some missing books. That's
a little different.
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah, I don't think anybody's ever stole from me. I don't know. Maybe we'll just cut this question. Cut the question. Cut it. Cut this question out. Nothing.
Okay.
Thanks for that, Molly.
Principal's office now. And Radich suspends Emma for the rest of the day, blaming her for setting the wheels in motion that led to the food fight. Since Spike is out of town, she is being released to Mr. Simpson, who she is sure will be 100% supportive of her position here.
Mm-hmm.
That's what you get for assuming. I also just love that she's fully in trouble, getting suspended in the principal's office, and still won't back down.
Mm-hmm.
No.
She sticks to her guns, man.
Not a lick of sorry in there. Now in Quan's class, the kids pack up, and Jimmy wants to show Marco the new Kid Elric track.
Yeah.
But
this is
cannot.
The first mention of Kid Elric on the
show,
I think.
Yeah.
I also think it's poetic that, you know, I think Aubrey has completed his transformation into becoming the real life Kid Elric. Because all last month it was like, hey, yo, did you hear that new Drake track, that new Drake album? He is the new Kid Elric.
Fair enough. Here, I'll show you on this trusty MP3 player.
This was huge for us as a generation. You went from like 12 to 16 tracks on a CD on your Walkman. Now, all of a sudden, was the first iPod even thousands? I think it was probably like 500 or something songs.
I want to say I remember like 2000 being enough.
Wow.
1500, 2000. I could be wrong.
Your entire music collection could live on your iPod.
Yeah. All organized by artist, by album.
Yes.
It was incredible. It was a mini computer with all your music.
And you're going to see a show tonight by an mm-hmm. artist who was on my first iPod and was introduced to me around this time, Death Cab for Cutie.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Because my story about how I got into Death Cab is Degrassi related.
I got into them a little bit late. It was with I Will Possess Your Heart, and then I worked backwards afterwards.
I didn't know who Death Cab was. I didn't even really know the genre existed. But our receptionist at Epitome Pictures, where we would walk in every morning and say hi, or, you know, at the end of the day.
You're talking about right in the front entrance?
Yeah, in the foyer.
Buzz in the...
Yeah. There was like a radio in there, and she was listening to, she'd like love this artist. She's like, oh, it's my playlist. It's Death Cab for Cutie. I was like, that's a crazy name. And I went out and I bought it the next day. And it was on like heavy rotation while we were making the show.
That is
so have
story.
Fun. So have fun tonight.
So why aren't you coming to the show, man?
I didn't even know it happened. I didn't know what was happening. Now
obviously,
it's too late.
Obviously, you wouldn't follow them into the dark, Mike.
Yeah.
Jeez. How did we get to that?
iPod.
Oh, yes.
Kid Elric. Yeah.
I actually, just like, I never had the original iPod. I never had an iPod with a screen, actually. I only had the shuffle, mm-hmm. The little clip-on shuffle, and then...
Yeah, it was exciting. I don't know who's coming up next.
Anyway, Jimmy wants to show Marco the new Kid Elric track, but then notices that... He lost his MP3 player, and angry with himself, he whips his bag against the wall, sparking comments from Spinner once again about being spoiled, not caring about his things, and it's okay because Daddy, Papa, will just buy him a new one. And then Jimmy snaps back with Spinner being very jealous, and... To this, Spinner says, I'm not jealous because I am buying a brand new 555 Soul hoodie this afternoon. But when questioned how he could afford it, he clams up and runs off.
Yeah, good question.
Because, shut up.
None of your business.
Mr. Simpson is now talking to his class when there's a knock on the door, and to his shock and dismay, Emma walks in. She lets him know that she's disregarding the suspension because she thinks it's wrong. It was done in bad faith. And Simpson, and trying to put out this fire in a professional way, pulls her aside and stands firm that she is suspended and must go home. Emma is stung, expecting that Simpson would have been on her side for this. And after a long glare, she collects her things and leaves.
Mm-hmm.
She's so idealistic, Emma, that she can't imagine a world where even with, you know, Simpson being a teacher and understanding the rules, that he wouldn't be like, no, you're right. You don't have to listen to that order from Radich. It's
yeah. Funny. And this is it's about boundaries, right? And she's testing these boundaries. And I think Simpson is at this point is like worried about how he's going to navigate this, because it is a dilemma, right? Mr. Radich is his boss. Mm-hmm. He's got to enforce what he says, but he also needs to be, well, he's also in a predicament because he's the new parent. He doesn't mm-hmm. want a war. He doesn't want to go to war with the teenager who is like he's kind of become the de facto parent of suddenly.
He's also there in front of the whole class. So he can't yeah. he can't let her openly defy the principal's orders. Mm-hmm. No matter how he actually feels about it, he has to send her. And I think he also goes above and beyond to prove to everyone that she doesn't get preferential treatment.
Yeah, sure.
Because they have a personal relationship, right? So it's, I wouldn't want to be in his position. That's a tough one to navigate for sure.
Yeah.
Now Spinner is in the bathroom and happens to bump into good old Sully. Hey, Kit. Spinner then makes the choice to try to sell Jimmy's MP3 player, saying that it was a birthday present, but he doesn't want it or doesn't need it. Sully is a bit apprehensive, but Spin pushes. He plays hardball, and Sully agrees to buy it from Spinner after school for $120.
Exactly the price of the sweater.
Yeah. I'm just wondering why he didn't just buy it from him right then.
Yeah, I know.
Like, if he had the cash. But he was still there. Like, it's the same school day, isn't it? So if Maybe did he run home. To the bank?
Yeah, he ran to an ATM.
Yeah. It had to work for the story, but
it doesn't need to make sense.
It doesn't. No, obviously not.
Oh, I like at the end of this scene where you look into the mirror.
What have I become? Yeah. Great hair, though. Now we're outside the school, and Emma still is not done. She holds a sign that says freedom and answers questions from Ellie, who's interviewing Emma for the grapevine. Emma now explains that it's no longer just about the GMO foods. It's about freedom of speech and her right to protest, which she believes she's being stifled and punished for. Radich now confronts her off of school property.
Mm-hmm.
It's noteworthy, demanding she put an end to this. But Emma is defiant as always and will not back down. So Radich leaves her with the ultimatum of apologizing for her actions on the next morning's announcements or face a week suspension.
Yes. Did you know what she was going to decide to do at this point?
It's Emma. She's not going to kowtow, right?
I think we're all waiting to see how she's going to flip the script. Yeah.
It's
yeah.
got to be in a very public way where no one, you know, it's the live broadcast.
Yeah.
What are you doing? Cut the cameras.
Watching scenes filmed out there on the back lot, which we all know was just a private studio set. It's not downtown. It's not a real school. But seeing it brought to life with background and strategically placed mailboxes and then adding in just that low din of, you know, streetcar sounds passing by and horns honking in the background always seems to convince my brain that we are in a school downtown, even though we're not. It's just, they did a good job of that.
They did a very good job. Yeah. And in this one, many of the cars in the parking lot were getting their, you know, 15 minutes of fame. And
those are crew cars and cast cars.
Yeah, my that's car where, is there somewhere. Yeah,
your
yeah,
car yeah. is there. We all parked in that park. Like, that's the funny thing, people. Those are not picture cars.
No.
It's the cruise parking lot is what you're looking at.
Yeah. The only, the way that you know if a car is for picture is if it's getting smashed up or dirty.
Yes.
Being vandalized to some extent.
Yeah.
Otherwise, it's just someone who works there. Was it this episode or no, it was last episode where one of the scenes in the hallway, there was an announcement. Nicole Hamilton, please come to the office immediately.
Nicole was she was a producer. Production manager. No, yeah.
I think she was PM at some point or something.
We went on a trip. You and I went on a trip with Nicole to Denver. Yeah.
Denver,
we did a mall tour out there and Nicole came with us. She's cool.
Yep.
There's a lot of little Easter eggs like that. I'm not even sure. And every time I see something like when Emma and Sean are walking down the street in that scene about fish apples, there's a parking ticket, a prominently placed parking ticket on one of the windows of the car. Like, you can't miss it. It's very obvious in the scene. And I just know that if I had walked up to that and flipped the parking ticket, the writing on that, it would have been like Linda Schuyler, officer of the law. You know, like, they were always throwing these hidden little Easter eggs, crew members. So look out at the bulletin boards and all of the GAC on set. There's the names. They're all crew.
My favorite ones were always the film posters where they're going into like produced by, directed by, and all the names over there.
Yeah.
And sometimes they weren't even names. They were just they were just writing random phrases in there.
Yeah, yeah.
Just to try to make people laugh. It was, yeah. It's
great. There was always stuff to laugh at, yeah.
There was a certain point where I guess the camera crew got a little bored and they wanted to see how much they could get away with. And they started to place a cat, just a little prop cat.
What?
Secretly in every shot. They
no
wanted
way.
To yes.
What episodes are they in?
I can for the life of me I can't remember right Damn. Now, but there
okay,
was
okay, look out for this cat.
Yeah.
That'll be fun. Yeah. I'm going to be watching for this now.
Spinner is anxiously waiting for Sully in the foyer, but Jimmy spots him coming down the stairs and chooses this moment of all moments to apologize to Spinner for joking around about his clothes and just being insensitive. Spinner, worried about getting caught now, accepts Jimmy's apology, kind of, and then quickly tries to get him to leave. But Jimmy does not leave, and before Spinner can do much else, Sully walks up, cash in hand, ready to buy the MP3 player. And Spinner has a feeble attempt at running interference, but eventually he's caught red-handed. And Jimmy is angry and disappointed. He storms off, leaving Spinner to think on the gravity of this very stupid choice.
I can't, for the life of me, understand why Spinner makes this choice.
No.
What was your motivation in this scene? Like, how are you justifying this?
To someone like Spinner, who doesn't really think these things through and is very emotional, very quick to anger, sort of feels like his nose is being dragged in, you know, all the misfortune of his life juxtaposed against all this, you know, glitz and glamour that that Jimmy is constantly putting on display. And I maybe just the idea of Jimmy doesn't even seem to care about all of this stuff that he has. So, you know, better me have it and make use of it than the person that doesn't appreciate it anyway. I don't know.
I think if there was like if Spinner had a predicament where he owed money or something like that and had to make that choice, you know, I would feel a little bit more sympathetic to him. But he's like, I just want to buy something too, so I'm going to steal my friend's iPod.
Yeah, I don't. What I'm wondering now is if the iPod, the choice to sell the iPod, was made after he told Marco and Jimmy that he was planning on buying that hoodie. I'm wondering if he just would have kept that MP3 player for himself and just used it when Jimmy wasn't around. I don't know. It didn't, whatever it was not a good plan.
Yeah.
Because if Jimmy's your best friend, he's going to see it at some point and you're always going to feel guilty. I don't know.
Like, even if Spinner had explained, like, well, it was going to get, you know, like swept away or rained on or stolen by somebody else, you know, finders keepers kind of thing, anything to explain how he was justifying it to himself.
Yeah,
but I guess.
But I mean, like, it's your best friend, no matter what. Like, you're.
Yeah.
Well, what do you do if your buddy, even if you're in a fight with someone, you're out with someone, and their wallet like falls out of their back pocket, and you
finders keepers.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. No, there's no justifying what Spinner did. You can rationalize like his thought process a little bit, but it's still like.
Yeah.
It's not excusable, no matter what.
Yeah.
Now Emma's at home and she sits at the kitchen table and awaits a talking to from Snake, who just got home. But he doesn't want to reprimand her. He just wants to understand why this one thing means so much to her. And he's actually touched when he realizes that for her, it all boils down to wanting to protect the family, keep them healthy, keep them safe, them and the new baby.
Mm-hmm.
And Snake explains that as family, he completely supports her, but as a teacher, he's caught between a rock and a hard place. So whatever decision she has to make about apologizing or being suspended, she has to do it without his counsel.
Which is cool. I mean, he's going, listen, you're a grown up. You've got to make your own decisions. And I can't be there to save you or to rescue you or to help you make this choice. And decisions carry consequences. So I can't make it for you. And you're going to have to live with those consequences no matter what. So this is your responsibility. I thought that was really good parenting.
Yeah. He's coming into his own. He's a lot better than he thinks.
He's a real dad now.
He's a real... training wheels are off. Okay. Now it's a new day at school. Jimmy walks into the cafeteria and orders a breakfast burrito, but is not presented with a burrito. He's presented with a tray with his MP3 player on it, held by a contrite spinner who's in work attire. Obviously, he took the job in the cafeteria. Now,
he needs the money.
Jimmy is not moved by this gesture, so Spinner starts to explain himself and apologize a bit more, but Jimmy can't hear it. He can't look past what Spinner did, and for the moment, at least, the two are no longer friends.
Yeah. Too little, too late. Also, gotta hand it to Jimmy that when he realizes that Spinner's about to pawn his MP3 player to Sully, he actually walks away.
Yeah.
It's a power move. He could have wrestled the MP3 player away from Spinner. Could have been a, but he goes, you know what? I'm going to just like let him live in this and I'm out.
He's like, all right, sell it, buddy.
Yeah. Cool. Yeah. Cool. It's a dare. Yeah. It's pretty cool.
Yeah. It was a power move. Yeah. It's a great line too. Sounds like a steal. Yeah.
Classic Degrassi wordplay there for you.
There was a good one in the last episode too. Always make sure you have a condom on you.
On you.
Yeah. All right. We've reached the last scene and it's time for the morning announcement.
And Emma's going to apologize to the whole school.
There you go. It's time for her apology. And Radich proofreads her speech. Like, what did she have to type out?
I think he wants to make sure this is going to go over well.
Yeah.
Like, okay. Great. That's awesome. I love it.
Yeah. He seems to be content. And Emma takes her mark. She begins by telling everybody that she was asked to apologize for the food fight and the protesting. But then after a quick beat and glance to Radich, she continues that she will not be apologizing as she felt everything she did was warranted and just. Radich's face falls, but as we look around the school, we have a very nice shot of a proud Mr. Simpson smiling.
Yeah, he's smiling. It's really nice.
And Ashley tips her hat as well. And when Emma's done, she walks up to Radich, head held high, fully accepting of the punishment to come. And we freeze.
Yeah, she's going home for the week. She's just bought a vacation.
That looks terrible on your school record.
Yeah. Very bad for your transcripts. Yeah.
This is why she's unemployable now.
I like the wink, the smile from Simpson because, yeah, he's proud of her on a level. Like he's encouraged her to stick to her guns and her beliefs, and she's going to, you know, there will be consequences, but she's made a choice, and she's grown up.
And she is who she is, and she has her convictions. She trusts her, and I think it's a good lesson to give a kid early on, like you said, that, listen, you can stick to your guns, and there will always be consequences for whatever choice you make. And the more meaningful it is, the bigger the consequences might be.
100%.
So if you really mean this and you really want it, then accept what comes to you.
Totally.
And
in the beginning, he says, you're ready to take on the UN when they're rehearsing. And that's true. Like he sees her as she's a force to be reckoned with. And you could stifle that. You know, you could try to alter that into make her hide it, but you would be doing her such a disservice. Because who knows where Emma ends up as a character? I've got some guesses, but, you know, it's probably a good place.
The only stifling of ideas in this episode should have been done to Spinner. Everybody else was okay.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, cool. So we made it.
Nice.
We made it. It was a good episode. I'd like to see my wife kicking ass and
kicking
taking
butt.
Names.
That's yeah. right. In the Degrassi universe.
Much to people's, you know, chagrin.
It's strange to think that that there are stories that people tell outside of the show and wonder, and that the universe exists irrespective of us as people. It's just doing its thing.
All right. Do we have a little bit more in the way of questions?
Heck yeah. Well, let's get to an email. All right. So we got a question here in our email, dgradspodcast@gmail.com. If you want to send love or hate, hey, Mike and Shane, loving the podcast as always. In Dressed in Black, we will be remiss for having missed this last episode, but we're going to do our best to answer it now. Moes says, I thought it was a brilliant choice that Craig's glasses in the Taming of the Shrew performance scene are exactly like his dad's glasses. Even when he first puts them on, the expression in his eyes seems like he's embodying his dad for the scene. For something like that, who would have come up with that idea? Would it have been written into the script by the writers? Do you know if the wardrobe department ever suggests stuff like that, if they had a good idea? Thanks, Mo. That's a great question. Who comes up with the ideas, especially if it relates to wardrobe or someone's department specifically?
I would think that this was a choice made by the writers. They knew what they needed to see there. And I don't know if it's beyond the realm of possibility that they told Jake, this has to, like, we want this to seem like your father. Like, they not directing his performance, but just suggesting something that they had in mind. And Jake just took it and ran with it. That's what I would think.
Yeah, for sure. There are definitely cases I've heard where actors will bring in an idea about an affectation or a style or a prop and bring that to the director. And then they'll sort of have a powwow with wardrobe and see if they want to make that a possibility. There's an image around out there of me with dreadlocks. It was a character role that I portrayed in a film, and it was the director's idea. It was his wish for me for the character, who's kind of going for like an ecologically minded kind of guy, right? So like this dreadlock dude who's a little bit more of a, you know, eco warrior debater kind of intellectual type guy. So I guess
he could sail off with Greenpeace.
Yeah, he could, exactly. He could sail off with Greenpeace. And the dreads were, it was tedious putting them in. It was a lot of work. So you really have to, you know, fight for something like that, because it's going to be, it was like 3 hours of makeup in the chair to put them in, and like an hour and a half every day of maintenance on set. Like, yeah, it was a lot of work. So anyway, so sometimes it's the director, sometimes it's the actor, and please don't look at that photograph. It's, you know, it doesn't age well. It's not, you know, for obvious reasons. I would never do that.
It's
again.
It's amazing to me that there are some details in shows, in movies, that just, you know, people pick up on and attribute some sort of symbolism to it when no one was the wiser. The director didn't mean to do that. The writer didn't notice, but it you know, takes on a life of its own. And then there are other directors or writers where every single detail is thought out.
Meticulous.
So meticulously.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Like David Fincher, you know, if it's in the film, there is a very specific reason.
Or Christopher Nolan. Everything is thought out and storyboarded.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wild. Cool,
wild.
Man.
Okay.
All right. Well, there? That was fun. We're there.
Yeah. It was fun. It's always fun. Mike, why don't you tell them one last time where they can talk to us?
Heck yes. Hit us up, dgradspodcast@gmail.com, or find our dgrads alumni Discord channel. Find us on Patreon, and help us support that way. The show would not be possible without you guys. You get the video, ad free video episodes to watch there and some other bonus content.
We love doing this. Mike, I love you.
Love you, buddy. I hope you have all the fun at that Death Cab show tonight.
Yeah. Well, I have a lot of work to do before heading off to that. So we're going to sign off. But this has been another episode of the Dgrads Podcast with Shane Kippel and Mike LaBelle. And we will see you all next week.
Ta-ta.